Why is it and how is it that when we are in a place of success, that when we find ourselves in that place where we should be glorying in the Lord, somehow we are so susceptible at that point in time to failure?
Is it possible to be too successful? Can a general ever win too big a victory? If you have already defeated your enemy, what can go wrong? Welcome to The Voice of Truth with Pastor J.D. Glasscock of Calvary Chapel, Houston Metro. In our earlier messages on Gideon, we saw how God worked miracles on behalf of Gideon. His tiny band of 300 soldiers defeated an immense army of Midianites. Unfortunately, the story doesn't end there, and it doesn't end well. If you have a Bible handy, open to Judges chapter 8 and listen as Pastor J.D. presents part 1 of the message, The Danger of Success.
Judges chapter 8, we're going to begin at verse 22. Then the men of Israel said to Gideon, "Rule over us, both you and your son, and your grandson also, for you have delivered us from the hand of Midian." But Gideon said to them, "I will not rule over you, nor shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you." And then Gideon said to them, "I would like to make a request of you, that each of you would give me the earring from his plunder." For they had gold earrings because they were Ishmaelites. And so they answered, "We will gladly give them." And they spread out a garment, and each man threw in the earring from his plunder. Now the weight of the gold earrings that he requested was 1,700 shekels of gold. By the way, that's more than 40 pounds of gold. Besides the crescent ornaments, the pendants, and the purple robes which were on the kings of Midian, and besides the chains that were around their camels' necks. Then Gideon made it into an ephod and set it up in the city of Ophrah, and all Israel played the harlot with it there, and it became a snare to Gideon and to his house. Thus Midian was subdued before the children of Israel, so they all lifted their heads no more, and the country was quiet for 40 years in the days of Gideon. And then Jerubbaal, the son of Joash, went and dwelt in his own house. And Gideon had 70 sons who were his offspring, for he had many wives. By the way, Jerubbaal is Gideon. It's another name. And his concubine, who was in Shechem, also bore him a son, whose name he called Abimelech. Now Gideon, the son of Joash, died at a good old age and was buried in the tomb of Joash, his father, in Ophrah of the Abiezerites. Well, yesterday I told my family that the Sunday message was about Gideon's iPod. Now, my teenage son was so excited. He said, "Finally, Dad, you're going to be preaching on something cool." Now, if you don't know what an iPod is, it's one of those little Apple listening devices. It's actually not Gideon's iPod. It's Gideon's ephod. Much has been written on the topic of success, and we're going to be talking about that this morning, not in the traditional sense of what you think a preacher might tell you, and that's how to be successful. We're going to be talking this morning, in fact, about the dangers of success. I haven't read it yet, but I understand that there's, in the bookstore, an idiot's complete guide to success, and I don't know why we need more successful idiots out there, but human nature seems to relish the idea of being seen as one who is successful. The flesh loves to glory in success. People strive for success. They live for success. They even drive for success. People even dress for success. Now, unfortunately, even within our modern church movement, they've been caught up in what I would call this success movement, making great shows of success. The question is there a danger in success? Does being successful have a downside? Well, according to the Bible, the answer is yes, it does. The Apostle Paul, writing to the Corinthians about temptation, he said in 1 Corinthians 10:12, he said, "Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall." You see, at the height of success, we believe at that time that we're strong. We have notoriety. People are looking up to us. Wow, you know, look how successful he's been. And yet the Bible warns that when we think we stand, we need to take heed. In other words, we need to be on guard lest we fall. Now, I believe that the Apostle Paul here, he's talking primarily about spiritual pride. When you believe in your Christian walk that you've arisen to that place where, you know, hey, man, I have it all together. The Bible says, be careful, because at that point you are in a danger zone and you are liable to fall. The same principle, however, applies to every area of success. Bill Gates, he has an autographed picture of Henry Ford in his office. And he was asked if it was because of Ford's success. And Gates commented, well, no, really. There are many lessons on the dangers of success. And Henry Ford is a perfect example. You see, in 1927, Ford was at the top of the corporate ladder as far as the automotive industry. Well, General Motors at that time took over, and they've been in the lead over Ford ever since. You see, what happened was Ford leaned back on their success, and they took rest. And that's a dangerous place to be. Ask any who have climbed Mount Everest. There are some who report that as they've gone up the descent, they're coming towards the top, the peak. They're the highest peak. There are actually bodies of those who have gone before. And unfortunately, because of oxygen deprivation, they did not make it and they died. And of course, there's no way to get them down. It's been said that the air is thin at the peak of success, and it's at the top that many fail and many fall. Well, in our text this morning, we see Gideon. He's the hero of Israel. He has just led the Israelites to one of the most spectacular military victories in the nation's history. Gideon has just outdone 135 Midianites and Amalekites, and it would appear that Gideon here is a spectacular military genius. However, this was all God, but as far as the nation of Israel was concerned, they looked upon Gideon and they said, wow, this is a military genius we have. Look what he's done. He took 300 men and he defeated 135,000 Amalekites, Midianites. Everyone was talking about Gideon. He was the hero of the day, and now the men of Israel, they want to crown him king. In fact, even more than that, the Bible says that the men of Israel, they want a Gideon dynasty. They want not only Gideon, but they want Gideon's son and his grandsons to rule over them. Notice with me verse 22. Then the men of Israel said to Gideon, "Rule over us, both you and your son and your grandson also, for you have delivered us from the hand of Midian." Modern translation, Gideon, you're the man. You're the one. Lead us. Be our king. But notice with me Gideon's reply. And this is a beautiful moment for Gideon. In fact, it's one of the last of his great moments. Verse 23. But Gideon said to them, "I will not rule over you, nor shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you." Now, in the margin of your Bible, next to verse 23, I'd like for you to write one word, a single word. It's the word success. Because here we see Gideon, up to this point, he is an image, an emblem of success for the nation of Israel. He's just successfully defeated 135,000 Midianites with only 300 men. That is success. And in this state of euphoria, all of the men of Israel are saying, "Be our king, Gideon." You see, Gideon had gone from being an insignificant nobody to being a real somebody. All the men of Israel were voting for Gideon as king, and Gideon says, "No, I will not rule over you." And you might say, well, now hold on just a moment, Gideon. What happened? Did Gideon have a brain freeze here? I mean, why would anybody refuse a position of king? Why would you refuse, you know, the special treatment? Why would you refuse the palace? Why would you refuse the golden crown and the security team and all that goes along with it, the free camel rides, whatever it is that a king had? This is Israel's first attempt, by the way, at inaugurating a king. You see, it was an emblem of success to have a king. All the other successful nations around had kings. We need a king, Gideon, and you're the man. Gideon, however, he understood the plan of God. You see, God had a different plan for the nation of Israel. Israel was to be a nation governed by a theocracy. Now, the word theocracy means government by divine guidance. Gideon had it right. God's plan for the nation of Israel was that she should be under the rule of God and not man. And so the nation of Israel, at this very pinnacle of victory, this state of weakened spirituality, they attempt to bring Gideon into this position of king, and Gideon says, "No, I will not." So here we see Gideon at this juncture, he's standing strong. Spiritual victory on every front, the Midianites, history. He has successfully refuted the attempt to crown him as king. He understood the plan of God. Gideon, you might say, is at the top of the mountain, but unfortunately, we see here as Gideon begins to fall. You know, for Christians, success comes in many flavors. It may be that glorious moment when you first lead someone to Jesus Christ. You remember how wonderful that felt? You know, just for somebody to listen to the Word of God as you explain it to them, and they receive Christ, and it's just a wonderful feeling. It could be at that moment when you've been praying for somebody and they are miraculously healed, and you just go, oh, wow, look what the Lord has done. You know, and God used me in that entire process. This is so great. It could be a time when you've had victory over a specific habit, maybe something you've been struggling with for years. It could be an addiction. It could be some struggle with the flesh. And finally, you feel like, you know what, I've come to a place of personal victory in this, and you're just, oh my goodness, this is so wonderful. And you're in that euphoric state of just, oh, look what God has done. It could be that your ministry is flourishing. Wow, you know, look at what God is doing with the ministry here. Oh, this is so great. And God, you've been so good. But you see, God's plan for us is for us to live victorious and successful lives. But in the house of victory, there lurks a danger. And I'd like to point that out in verse 24. Then Gideon said to them, I would like to make a request of you that each of you would give me the earrings from his plunder, for they all had gold earrings because they were Ishmaelites. Okay, you might say, well, now that seems innocuous enough. What's wrong? I mean, that's kind of like asking for the game ball, so to speak. You know, give me the earrings. That's all I'm asking for. Well, the key phrase here is give me. You don't see anything about the Lord in here. Nothing about God taking place in here. It's Gideon now focusing on self, and he's saying, give to me. And that's always where we begin to fall, is when the focus becomes upon me. You see, Gideon had just pummeled 135,000 of these guys, and he wanted all of those gold earrings. But listen, it says in Exodus 20:23, you shall not make anything to be with me, gods of silver or gods of gold, you shall not make for yourselves. The Lord has spoken. And now Gideon is asking for gold. And you might say, well, what's up with that? Gideon, how could you? God has just handed you this spectacular victory. How is it that now at this point in your career, you might say, at the top of success, what are you doing asking for gold? Well, next to verse 24, I hope in verse 23 you wrote success, because next to verse 24 there, you can write the word failure. And I'd like for you to notice something with me between verse 23 and 24. Notice how closely aligned those words success and failure appear to be. You see, there's no chapter break. It's not a different day. It's not a different hour. It's out of the same breath. Gideon goes from this place of success to a position of failure as he asks for something that is against the will of God for the nation of Israel. The Lord had said, you are to make nothing out of gold. I alone am to be your God. And now here is Gideon asking for the gold earrings. What is our problem? Why is it and how is it that when we are in a place of success, that when God has delivered a victory, that when we find ourselves in that place where we should be glorying in the Lord, somehow we are so susceptible at that point in time to failure? Why is that? Have you ever considered that question? Why is it? You remember when Jesus went into the garden? There he was with his disciples, and it was just prior to his crucifixion, and he was praying, wasn't he? And you recall that Peter, James, and John, as they went in and they were there with him, and as the Lord went off to pray, he came back and he saw the disciples, his three closest followers, and there they were asleep. Jesus said to them, he said, watch and pray lest you enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. And you see, that's our problem. You see, the spirit is willing. Gideon's spirit, by all means, was willing. We see that in verse 23. He was willing to honor the Lord. He wanted to honor God in everything that he did. But yet, within Gideon, his flesh, he discovered he was weak. And he struggled. He struggled with the same issues that you and I struggled with today. What was Gideon's problem? I believe, as we look at this, it was spiritual pride. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. You see, human nature is decrepit. It's deplorable. And because our flesh is weak, success can be dangerous. Well, what are the warning signs? How do I know if success is taking me in a direction away from the Lord? How can I tell when success becomes dangerous to me? I'm going to give you some principles here this morning. Number one, success is dangerous when it causes my dependency upon the Lord to shrink. When my reliance upon God shrinks because of success, that is the place of danger where success is dangerous. You remember back in chapter 6, Israel was crying out to the Lord for deliverance. 8 years of being plundered by the Midianites. Oh, Lord, when are you going to deliver us from the Midianites? I mean, they've been taking our grain. They've been taking our livestock. We're hiding in the caves of the hills here. And Lord, oh, they cried out, it says, unto the Lord for deliverance. And the Lord, you recall, visits with Gideon, and he promises that through Gideon's hand, he will deliver. God will deliver. And you recall that there is, as Gideon is having this conversation with the Lord there, you recall that after the Lord gave him this promise to deliver through his hand, you remember that he goes back, and then he lays out the fleece, and says, well, Lord, I want to be absolutely sure this is really you, and that this is really what you're telling me. And so he lays out this fleece to be sure. He was relying completely upon the Lord. And isn't it interesting how when we're in that place of desperation, how quickly we cry out to God. Oh, Lord, help me with my finances. Lord, help me with my children. Lord, help me in my marriage. Lord, help me in my job. And we become desperate and we cry out to God. And we become like this with the Lord, don't we? We begin to read his word again. We begin to get into the Bible and study his word. And it's just so wonderful as we draw near to him and we say, you know, I would just love to be in this place all the time. But then what happens once we experience victory in that area where we've been praying? Once the Lord takes us on from that place where we're on our knees and he takes us to that point of success, what happens so often? Our dependency shrinks. You see, our dependency on the Lord should always be growing. We should remain in that place of continual dependency upon God and anything within our lives. When success comes in and it causes us to shrink away, to shrink back from our dependency upon the Lord, that is when success has become a danger to us. Number two, success is dangerous when success becomes a show. Let's look back together, starting at verse 25. When success becomes a show, it is dangerous. Judges 8, beginning at verse 25, and so they answered, we will gladly give them, speaking of all the earrings. And they spread out a garment, and each man threw into it the earrings from his plunder. And now the weight of the gold earrings that he requested was 1,700 shekels of gold, besides the crescents, the ornaments, the pendants, the purple robes, which were on the kings of Midian, and besides the chains that were around their camels' necks. Now this is a real show of success. What motivated Gideon to make this request? What was it that he was looking for? Why did Gideon at this point ask for the gold? Well, in verse 27, it says, then Gideon made it into an ephod and set it up in his city, Ophrah. You see, Gideon took the gold from the earrings, he melted it down, and he melted it into this image that was an ephod. I'll cover that in more detail in just for a moment. And he set it up in the midst of the city. Now, what we have here is the image of success, kind of like a trophy, a reminder of victory. But the question is where is God in Gideon's success at this point? Where is God in this? You see, the problem is Gideon had left God out completely. Gone was the fleece. Gone was the request for, Lord, please show me what to do. Gone was the request for the divine guidance and the dependency upon the Lord. And here's Gideon now making his own decisions in spite of what the Lord has already said in his word. It was a show of success. You know, when God becomes silent in an issue, sometimes that's not a good sign. Success is dangerous when it becomes a show. So what is the problem here? Well, you see, the problem here is that within man's flesh, we relish the opportunity to glory in victory. And God had specifically delivered Israel in such a way that only God was to receive the glory. You see, it was a supernatural event that had occurred on the battlefield. You remember back in chapter 6 when the plan was being laid out, how, and actually in chapter 7 there at the beginning, when God says to Gideon, listen, go ahead and call the men, and Gideon makes this call, and 32,000 Israelites show up to go against 135,000 Midianites. What happened? God said, you know what, Gideon, that's too many men. If you use 32,000 men, if they should have victory, when I deliver the Midianites into your hand, you know what's going to happen? Israel's going to take the credit. And so what I want you to do is I want you to reduce the troop size, the troop purge. And you recall that Gideon made a request of the troops. You remember, first of all, it was, hey, whoever is afraid, whoever is feeling faint-hearted, go home. 22,000 of the men of Israel left, packed their belongings, headed home. And God said, you know what, Gideon, that is still too many. Here's Gideon, he's left with 10,000 men, and God says, that is still too many. In fact, if I deliver the Midianites into your hands, still Israel is going to glory, and Israel is going to take the credit. I have a little test I want you to give them. And he sent them down to the water, and he said, whoever laps water like a dog, those are the ones that I would like for you to keep. Those who go down on their hands and knees, however, and they begin to suck water with their faces to the water, those are the ones you want to get rid of. I wonder if Gideon at this point was kind of sweating just a little bit. And there as they go down to the water and the men are, you know, there's 9,700 men that get down on their knees and they put their face in the water and Gideon's going, oh no. What are you doing, Lord? 300 men, this is impossible. And God is saying, you know, it's exactly right, Gideon. That's what I want you to understand, is that this is impossible. It is impossible that 300 men could defeat an army of 135,000. You see, that's where the Lord wants us, there in the impossible. Just leaning and trusting upon Him. And God was to be the emblem of Israel's success. They were to look to the Lord alone for success. And now, after the victory, we have Gideon making an ephod, an image, and turning Israel's eyes away from the Lord and onto the image itself. You see, the problem here is that Israel was to look to God alone as the emblem of success, and it doesn't take much to draw attention away from the Lord. It comes very naturally. It's so human. Our flesh runs to the open door of superficiality. I would ask you this morning, is God your emblem of success? Is He the one you uphold, and is He the one you hold up and say, you know what, this is the reason I am what I am, is because of the Lord. Is He your emblem of success? You know, Paul, as he was writing, he said, I glory in nothing except Jesus Christ and Him crucified. By all worldly standards, Paul would have been considered a successful man, but he said, hey, I count that all as loss. It's Jesus Christ, and it's Jesus Christ alone, and is Jesus your emblem of success? I'm not talking about material success necessarily or spiritual success. Is He just your emblem that you hold up and you draw people's attention to the Lord? You see, in our programmatic thinking, we believe that as people look upon our success, they're going to say, hey, you know, I really want to get involved in what you're doing. Look at you. You're a successful man, or you have a successful ministry. I would like to emulate that. I'd like to become like that. They're drawn to that. And in doing so, we don't necessarily take glory away from the Lord. After all, we don't want to appear as glory thieves. However, we sure like the idea of sharing the glory. I'm right up there with God. I'm successful. Look what I've done. It is interesting. As we read about men and women in the Bible, we soon discover that, like us, they have character flaws. If you examine the mess-ups, if you go back and you look at David, if you go back and you look at Abraham, if you look at Jacob, you look at the men who were, the Bible would say these were great men. They made it into the hall of faith. Great men of faith. And yet at some point within their lives, they fell. And what you will discover as you look at each one of these men is you will discover that there is a character flaw.
You have been listening to The Voice of Truth with Pastor J.D. Glasscock of Calvary Chapel, Houston Metro. For a copy of today's message, call 281-499-6301. That's 281-499-6301. And mention today's date, or you can visit our website at calvary.cc. That's calvary.cc. Calvary Chapel meets for worship services every Sunday morning at 9:30 at 7711 Brazewood Boulevard in Houston, Texas. We also have a midweek Bible study Wednesday evenings at 7. Thank you for listening, and we hope you will join us again for the next broadcast of The Voice of Truth.